Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
All right, the worst takes of the week. Who made the list? Blankers didn't quite make it with that Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey. It didn't quite make the list, but Blankers, one that you saw earlier this week, actually it was over the weekend. How about Josina Anderson crushing Kylian Mbappe?
Yeah, that was crazy to me. The fact that, you know, I don't know if it's one of those tell me you don't watch without telling me you don't watch kind of things. But the fact that right as she was basically tweeting the fact that he needs to show me more, and just because he has breakaway speed and can do these kind of things, that he hasn't done enough, and then boom, just like that, he's got multiple goals, and it's like, bet you wish you had a redo and that was on a fishing reel that you could bring back when you needed it.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the best footballers in the world. One of the very, very best.
What, 23 already years old too, right?
He just turned 24 a couple days ago. He was 23 when he played in the World Cup. He was 24 December 20th, so just celebrated a birthday, Kylian Mbappe. He's already won a World Cup. He's widely considered one of the best footballers in the entire world. Yeah, this is a perfect example, Blankers, you're right, of Josina Anderson telling us she doesn't watch football without telling us. She doesn't watch football. And it is football. It is football. Don't give me the whole it's soccer thing. It's football.
It's football.
Yeah, however you want to pronounce it. All right, we got some groundbreaking stuff here with Bad Take Boulevard and making the list. Normally we see the afternoon program very much filling out Bad Take Boulevard every single week.
Oh, God.
This time it's the morning show.
Uh-oh.
This time it's Lance Zierlein. I can't believe it. I never thought that Lance Zierlein would make the list. I never thought that Lance Zierlein would make Bad Take Boulevard, but Lance Zierlein has made it on the Bad Take Boulevard. Lance Zierlein, last Sunday at 2:42 p.m. as the Houston Texans were playing football. I understand this is going to upset some people, but Davis Mills is having a really good game today. Just stating facts. Davis Mills would proceed to fumble the ball in overtime that led to the game-winning score. And Davis Mills, even though people consider that his like best game that for Davis Mills standards, he was like 12 of 24. Davis Mills was not having a really good game today.
I mean, don't you have to kind of take it into context?
Like no!
A Davis Mills really good game?
No!
As bad as he's been?
No, the bar is always NFL starting quarterback caliber. If he's starting quarterback, that is the bar. I don't care if Davis Mills is better than Davis Mills of Christmas past. That's not what I want to relate him to. He's got to be graded against his compadres, his peers, his colleagues.
Okay. I never thought Lance would ever be on this either.
Me
so
either.
I'm a little befuddled by this, trying to defend my man Lance by LZ by saying, I think what he meant is, you know, we've seen who Davis Mills really is. So by his standards, he's actually playing pretty well today.
No, made the list. And
you're not
also,
going to accept that?
Plus, he jinxed it. Plus, Davis Mills fumbled in overtime. This was the Brendan Riley from last week when he was talking about how the Texans were going to beat the Cowboys. I guess it was 2 weeks ago. And then obviously they didn't. So, yeah, Lance landing on the list of Bad Take Boulevard. What you got, Blankers?
Man, I mean, to me, the one thing that I was going to say was, I'm going to do something that you do with local people. I'm going to keep it general because I'm not going to sit there and really call someone out and then have them take all that heat. But for the people that saw a 5-game home winning streak by the Houston Rockets, the people that decided suddenly that this was a team on the move that could make the play-in game and more, that this was a playoff team, that this is what we're finally seeing. Look, we've talked about this with the Texans. Just because Dameon Pierce plays well doesn't mean that they're a great team. So the fact that the same people were sitting there trying to then justify getting just hammered by the Spurs and then last night blowing a 15-point lead. You don't watch the game. Like Josina Anderson, tell me you don't watch the game without telling me you don't watch the game is by saying, oh, no, they're playing great defense. Oh, no, their offense looks fantastic. They're moving the ball. There's cutting and action. You must have turned the channel and it might be watching it in black and white and can't figure out who's on what team and which team you're watching. There's no way you watch the last two games or a lot of the basketball after they won the impressive stretch of 5 games at home, but especially the Portland game and some of the games that they won. And tell me that that's a playoff team, because they're not.
No, definitely not a playoff team. I'm not sure anybody in the NBA plays good defense. I think teams play better defense than the rest of the league. I don't think anybody really cranks it up.
But you know what, Jeremy? The teaser was, I saw in that stretch, the Miami, even when they lost, the Portland game, some of those other games, I started to see defensive rotations. You and I talk about this off the air a lot. The fact that you can help the helper, that you know that the weak side was coming over to cover the lane. I saw these things, especially with the younger guys going, oh, they're getting it. They're finally starting to do what they're supposed to do. And then it all just fell off a cliff.
Yeah, I think it's a race for optimism. And it's a young team. I mean, you're going to have the growing pains. All right, next guy that lands on the list of Bad Take Boulevard, Jim Bowden of Major League Baseball. He was on MLB Network Radio, and there's two different ways you can take this. First off, he said, Houston, you've got a problem. Yankees fans should be celebrating after the Yankees signed Carlos Rodon to the free agent deal. The other one, that look, he said the little cute little saying that everybody likes to say, Houston, you've got a problem. They think they can chase clout, get cachet, whatever. But he said that Carlos Rodon is the best left-handed starter in the league. Carlos Rodon of a career 3.60 ERA. Now, he's had two good seasons these last 2 years, but these last 2 years, Carlos Rodon has been a free agent, right? So he's been a pitcher knowing that he's about to cash in. So this past year, he signed the one-year deal with San Francisco. Pitched pretty good, 14-8, 288 ERAs, nothing to sneeze about. 2 years ago in Chicago, among injury concerns, remember he wasn't really available in the ALDS against the Astros, only started 24 games. Carlos Rodon as the best left-handed pitcher in all of baseball is outrageous. It lands Bowden on Bad Take Boulevard. The next time, Blankers, that Carlos Rodon, who, look, if you're the best whatever, righty, lefty, in Major League Baseball, you should probably be pitching a lot of innings, right? Mm-hmm. The next time Carlos Rodon throws 180 innings, and keep in mind Carlos Rodon is injury-prone, the next time he throws 180 innings in a year will be the first time Carlos Rodon throws 180 innings in a year, and usually pitchers aren't as good the wrong side of 30. He turns 30 this year. You're on the list, Jim Bowden.
Yeah, no doubt about it, because I would actually follow that up by saying, also, not just Bowden, but Major League Baseball. Because MLB, and we know that the Robbie Manfred love for the Yankees, and I mentioned this to you guys, I think, in passing when I saw it during the course of the week. You and I might have been in a commercial break. But the fact that MLB's Twitter account put out best rotation in baseball and put the Yankees rotation there because they got Rodon and didn't look at the fact that, yeah, you got Gerrit Cole. Yeah, you have Rodon. But you know what? You look at everything else and go, there's plenty of other teams that have better 1, 2, 3, 4s, 5s. You've got a guy in Hector, I won't call him what you call him, but you know
what? Why not?
Because it's a little bit over the top, but and I know it's me, but hey, at the same time, I'm turning over a new leaf. All I know is that guy did something for 1 year. We'll see if he can continue to do it while he's there. But overall, I see better rotations. We saw what the Mets did in their own city, but the fact that Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred and all the people that love their Yankees right off the top, oh, that was the move that broke the bank. That was the one that made them the best rotation in baseball. Stop it already. That's crazy.
Yeah, that rotation's not bad, though.
It's good, fine, but there's a lot of good rotations in baseball.
I'm going to go to battle with the team that's done it. You know, I don't think Carlos Rodon's going to change a sweep, right? Like, you know, when the Yankees signed Judge.
Okay, maybe they win a game or two.
That's what I'm saying. Like, whenever the Yankees signed Judge, we had fun with it saying, well, yeah, adding Aaron Judge to that lineup sure going to change a lot of things when the Yankees face the Astros in the playoffs. Look, Rodon makes them better, but to call Rodon the best lefty in baseball I think is outrageous. I think people are getting recency bias for the year he's coming off of, and even 2 years ago, whenever he was with Chicago, had a good year, only started 20 something games. Like, the dude has a long lineage of injuries. Usually doesn't get better whenever you're 30 years old. And then also, he just cashed in. He was a free agent. He was a looming free agent these last 2 years. A lot of times players have their best years when their contract's expiring.
But here's the thing too, to me, you can have the local bias and say you think that Rodon is better than Framber Valdez, who had the start streak, he had all the things that he had going for him. And if you say, okay, you're an Astros fan, you're an Astros hunk, you would say that. Well, then take a look at the other guys that should be on this list ahead of a guy like Carlos Rodon. Julio Urias from the Dodgers, Max Fried from the Braves, Shane McClanahan from the Rays. Three right off the top of my head going, you know what? Been there, done that. Those guys are pretty damn good. We know McClanahan started the All-Star game because Dusty forgot who he was. But overall, we've seen Fried in the World Series. We've seen McClanahan. You know, Urias was one of the best pitchers on the best team in baseball in the regular season last year in the Dodgers. Yeah. So you take all those factors into it and tell me that Carlos Rodon is the best left-handed pitcher in baseball?
You know who I think is the best lefty in baseball?
Nestor Cortez.
Daly Raley, baby. Daly Raley, the best lefty in all of baseball.
He's not a starter. He could be an opener.
We said pitcher.
All right.
Alwyn Knighty on Twitter. He sent this in. Not sure why he tagged me. He should be tagging you. If you ever have a bad take, send him to @PacManJoel.
If his name is Knighty, maybe he needs a pajamagram.
But Alwyn Knighty sent us this one in on Twitter. He's reporting Jordan Punt. And I follow Jordan Punt. And Jordan does some pretty good stuff when it comes to the Texans. He does the Texans Wire. He's got a Texans podcast. All of this. I'm curious what you think about this one, actually, because we've had this argument. But he says, I wouldn't mind living in a world where Brock Purdy remains the 49er starter in the Texans trade for Trey Lance. Elite physical tools, as high of a ceiling as any quarterback in this year's draft. Learned under Shanahan, signs of progress this preseason. Cleveland 2024 first rounder for Trey Lance.
Absolutely freaking not. Are you kidding me?
What, like, you said the other day first.
Okay, depends on where the first lies and who's and who and what, you know, and the fact that with everything that this team needs. Yeah, it's a nice gamble to take on Lance, but I'm not taking a top 10, top 12 caliber first round
pick.
Well,
Cleveland 24, so we don't know where it would be. Maybe they're a playoff team next year.
Look, in terms of the potential, I get it. There's upside, but there's too many quarterbacks to choose from, and you've already been great about highlighting the different ways you can go out and get a quarterback. I understand they're going to want more probably than that want first because they have to believe in him and they believe in him more than most. But I've said all along my thoughts about what I've heard and what we've seen and what people are talking about in terms of him at practice and him not picking up, you know, how to read defenses and his progressions and all these other things in terms of the intangibles that made me worry. And that was well before this injury, which is a concern now because you got to figure out, is he going to be the same player coming back? Will he run the same? Will he do the same things? I'm not a fan. I haven't been a fan. I never was a fan, and I don't want to do that. But look, it depends on where you think that pick's going to be. If Deshaun and Cleveland become, you know, a playoff team next year because of it, and you believe that he's better than any player you could get, then again, like I said, if Caserio trusts his gut and that's his gut feeling, you have to trust Caserio.
I got to get in one more. Sorry, Brendan, but it's our last day of the year, so whatever. This happened on the highway to hell, which you should never listen to Highway to Hell if you wanted to talk baseball. This is probably why.
Especially not baseball.
This take from a Highway to Hell. They're baseball experts.
Especially if you have an 0-3 count.
They said they would have rather kept Aledmys Diaz over Michael Brantley. And I love Aledmys Diaz. I love the super utility. I love what Diaz brought to the Houston Astros. This was said on the Highway to Hell.
So
I would have rather kept Aledmys Diaz over Michael Brantley. That was the mistake I made, was listening.
Yeah, what the hell were you doing first and foremost?
I was jumping stations.
You can't trust guys that talk about 0-3 counts and what to do in an 0-3 count. Well, normally when 0-3 counts are there, you're sitting on the bench with a strikeout in the scorebook. How can you want a super utility guy that can't stay healthy as opposed to a 300 hitter that has been a steady for you? Ridiculous. Obviously, they're not the flagship of the Houston Astros.
That was my favorite one. Would have rather kept Aledmys Diaz over Michael Brantley.
Let's just let them stick to which finger do you pick your nose with and how do you put your Christmas lights up. Those are better discussions for the Highway to Hell.
We touched it a little bit. Rockets lost to the Magic yesterday, struggling again. What do we make of the recent struggles? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 is your home for Texas A&M Athletics. Catch all the football and basketball action right here as the Aggies make their way through the SEC. Only on ESPN 97.5. Giga Mag. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Rockets lost basketball yesterday. Lost a home game to another bottom team in the NBA. They fell to the Magic 116 to 110. Rockets have been struggling lately. Fourth straight loss for your local team, which if you're going to a Rockets game, stop by Section 125 and look for the Gentleman Bar and try that signature drink, the Big Shot Bob. But I digress. What do we make of these recent struggles for the Houston Rockets, Blinkers?
Look, I think for your health and well-being, I think it's exactly what you wanted to see. Getting back to the basics of making sure that you don't win any more games, because it is hyper important to get that high pick. I think that, to me, it still looks like, and the people that I've talked to and talked to very recently too, is that Steven Silas's days, as I keep saying, his hot seat's warming up, could be more and more numbered, because you're not seeing consistency in terms of what they're doing on both ends of the floor as a team, but as it relates to the development of a lot of the players that you're expecting to develop to make this team for the next several years. And I think that as fun and good as it was to beat some good teams and see some good results, especially at home, to possibly get interest up and fan support back, you're looking at it as a team in terms of the same way we analyze the Texans and other teams as they're trying to take that first big developmental step forward, and they're being held back. And I think you can only do that for so long. Now, for the rest of the season, it's probably fine, because that helps you to get to where you need to go to get either the one or the two pick and hopefully finish with the bottom three record. But it's disappointing as a basketball fan and as a longtime fan of this franchise and this team to see this team with this young talent not do more with it early on. And we've talked about a lot of it, from Eric Gordon getting too much time on the floor, and I know you got to keep him top of mind so people might want to trade for him. But, you know, Josh Christopher was a first-round pick. I need to see him out there a lot more. The fact that you didn't spend anything to get Deshaun Nix, but Deshaun Nix has no business being on the floor when Ty Washington's on the roster. And then when you first start playing Ty Washington, you and I were texting about this, he looked pretty good. Yeah, he looked like he can do some things. So then that even elevates even more. Why the hell is Deshaun Nix on the floor?
See, I have a pretty like laissez-faire way of watching the Rockets this year. It's kind of the way I've been watching the Texans, if I'm being honest. It's I don't really care about the result a whole lot. It's more about the context. It's more about the development of the young players. Because I think the Rockets have a very good nucleus. I really do. Mm-hmm. I'm bullish on Jalen Green. I think Jabari Smith's going to be really, really good at some point. He's not there yet. And people always like to compare him to Paolo Banchero and be like, oh, Paolo's a better rookie than Jabari. Okay. The Rockets didn't pass up on Paolo Banchero.
That's right.
The Rockets picked where the Rockets picked. It's not like they passed on Paolo for Jabari. They had Jabari fall to them. The Rockets
They took what was left.
Yeah, exactly. So like the Paolo Jabari debates are kind of weird to me. It's like they didn't pass up on Paolo. I think Paolo is a better rookie. I mean, it'd be silly to argue otherwise. But watching the context of it all, I look at it from a much bigger picture point of view. Same way I've been watching the Houston Texans, from a bigger picture point of view. And I think the Rockets are further along than the Texans are.
Agreed.
But some of the things, so I don't care that they're in a four-game losing streak. Like, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. Kelly Iko the other day had a piece in The Athletic talking to somebody else from The Athletic, saying that if the Rockets get a top-two pick, all of a sudden a playoff nucleus becomes a championship nucleus, potentially. Cart before the horse, I understand that. So, like, I don't care attitude about singular games. But the big picture are things that I like to look at. You mentioned a lot of those big picture things, like the effort level, the offensive structure. Are they getting any buy-in defensively? Those are things that you can relate to Steven Silas, and if he's going to be the long-term head coach of the Houston Rockets. And then the other parts of it as well are like some of the decisions of which players they're choosing to develop. Mm-hmm. Like, why is Nix getting 13 minutes in a backup point guard role when I thought he got outplayed by Ty yep. Washington the few times that he was able to play? Like, if I'm grooming one of those players, I'm grooming Ty. So it's weird to me who they're picking and choosing to develop, because right now it's about building the long term, and some of those building the long term decisions aren't ones that I necessarily agree with.
Here's the other thing that I don't like, Jeremy, as it relates to Silas and the coaching staff. The nonverbals are one thing, and we see the body language and we see the lack of effort. The verbals are the other. After the game the other night when they lost to San Antonio, it was more of a discussion about non-basketball issues, about attitude, about energy, about, you know, getting motivated, finding guys that are going to do the right thing. And the guys were actually talking about it. When they start talking about it, that means it's starting to come to a head. That means that's an issue too, that you wouldn't expect with a bunch of young guys just trying to put their best foot forward to make a mark and try and make a lasting impression to stay on this team and stay in this league. You're seeing it where if these kids don't like it and they're starting to talk about it, it's probably more of a problem than just the rumors that you hear about. On top of that, I've actually liked what I've seen in terms of the basketball being played by Kevin Porter Jr. more.
Sure.
So I want to make sure that someone is working with him so you understand you don't have to be the point guard. But you, when you're on the floor, you got to do the kind of things you've been doing in this small sample size recently. You've got to attack the basket. You've got to focus and capitalize on your skill sets that are better than most. And you also have to compliment Jalen Green and the other guys around you. And I don't know that he's getting that kind of coaching. I don't see that that's going to be a consistent factor that I'm going to believe is going to continue. And that's, again, why I think Steven Silas is a great dude. I think he was dealt a bad hand. I've said time and time again, this isn't what he signed up for. But at the same time, your interest isn't about what was signed up for. Your interest is developing and creating a winning environment where these kids are going to turn into something in the next year or two, 3 years. And right now, that's not the kind of plan and path that they're on.
Yeah, there's still time to change that to Silas. I mean, Silas has a chance to write it. And four-game losing streak, it's more about the big picture with the Rockets. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out there for Thomas. Thomas, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. I'm a Houston fan, and so usually I check in on the Rockets, especially post-Harden, like around the Christmas time. That's when my season starts. I happen to go to a few of the home games during the win streak, so I was pleasantly surprised. Fan of Tari, went to LSU, fan of a lot of the young guys, and I saw a lot of hustle. And I know this is a weird circumstance because of Silas's father passing, but there's something different about the way they play during that time when it's gone versus like now. And I guess it's easy to point now because of the losing streak and that kind of stuff. So I'm just kind of baffled, and the offense is boring, kind of like the Harden ball. So I feel like the best way to develop players is grab some coaches that have a system, offensive system, and can bring out. So I was a fan of Don Lucas, the passion that they played with them, but then I don't know what to fund offensively. So Don could share with any ideas, like coaches out there that might be. I know Silas is going to get a chance to redeem himself, but like who should be on the lookout on the coaching market? I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you for the call, Thomas. If I'm not mistaken, Lucas only coached one game. So I think it was one previously,
whether it would be non-COVID related illness or something like that. But I think one in Miami comes to mind. But he's had a couple of stints where he's coaching.
In a fill-in one-off type of situation like that, you're not going to see like the team like rally around so much for Lucas. In that game, they were held to like under 100 points too. So it was like a weird game that they won, whatever. Like, I don't think it was like a rallying cry around Lucas so much of like, oh, Silas is gone. So I don't really buy into that part a whole lot. I know that we've talked about like coaches that we like. Yeah. Unplanned, we both like the idea of Quinn Snyder. For me, it's anybody with structure, anybody that's going to get buy-in defensively, anybody that has good offensive game planning as well. Like, ISO ball, I understand at times ISO ball can be higher percentage of scoring in that offensive set versus running sets, but I believe in the course of a game, especially early, that create like running plays to get guys going is critical.
Well, and again, the other thing is, Jeremy, at a certain point, you're going to have a critical point in the game, and you don't have any kind of plays that you feel confident could be executed to get you the kind of shot that you need other than give the guy the ball on the wing and say, go get me two or three and isolate. And that becomes a factor, too, because I think that you're right. The next thing that these guys need to learn is structure and ball and body movement. And I don't think they're getting enough of it. There's a time for isolation. There's a time for open floor basketball. But there's also a time when it's crunch time, when it's less than 2 minutes, when the game is on the line, that you need to know that between practice and previous games, if we call one of these two or three plays, we're almost guaranteed to get an open look and pretty sure we're going to get a bucket out of it. And they don't have any of that. And I think that to the caller's point, the other thing is that the other guy that I really, really like, in the same draft as Ty Washington, is Tari Eason. Tari Eason should be getting more time. I know Kenyon Martin's dad feels like he needs to get more and be somewhere else. And some of the people on Twitch are talking about don't trade him. Well, the bottom line is, where else in the league is he going to get 20-plus minutes a game? And I don't know that there's many other opportunities than maybe OKC and some bad basketball teams. But at the same time, I don't want to be taking minutes away from Tari Eason because he needs to develop right now. And he's a two-way player that could do so many things to help this nucleus and this rotation. So it all comes down to, at a certain point, Rafael Stone's got to put his foot down. He has to have the same kind of plan and structure that a Nick Caserio has and say, hey, look, in my vision, as we go forward, we might need the next step, the next generation of head coach. that really does work well with young kids, that can get them to play structure, that can teach them the things they don't know, and can bring this unit closer together to play better team basketball. I'm not sure Silas is that guy.
713-780-ESPN. I got a couple of thoughts on that as well. Also, the what if we haven't even spent much time discussing. What does it mean if Lovie Smith is back? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Take a ride home with a Wheelhouse.
By rule, there's no cheering or loud noises allowed in the press box.
So no Cody can.
But that doesn't mean that I can't demonstratively be upset without making loud noises.
So what does that sound like? Do you make any sound?
There's not really any sound except for me just going...
Catch Jake Asman, Cody Stutes, and Brad Kellner weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Corey says, how do y'all feel about KJ Martin's development and future with the team? Personally, like the energy and excitement. See, I think, Blankers, to your point, like we're kind of picking guys like who we would prioritize in development over which other guy. I think that both can like get some run here. Just last night as an example, Tari played 21 minutes. Martin played 28 minutes. Eric Gordon played 32. Like, trade him. You got 32 minutes that can be split up with Martin and Eason. And one thing I would also like to see, and I don't think that the Rockets are going to do this, and I'm not saying that Ty Washington should be in the starting lineup, but I would like to see some run with Ty Washington as the point guard, mm-hmm. Kevin Porter playing off ball.
I agree with you. We talked about it. There's a couple things. Look, as it relates to Martin, here's what I'm going to say. Tough to find 20-plus minutes a game in this league, no matter who you are. But in this situation, it's allowed you to showcase that you have talent, that you can play in this league. But at the same time, appreciate the team giving it to you. Don't crap on them because they've given you an open invitation to do some things, and now you think you need more. Like, you're still offensively limited, but you have unbelievable athleticism. So I think that you're right. What we talked about, too, was trimming down the other guys' minutes that aren't going to be here long-term. So that, and again, move Gordon as soon as possible. And then I don't need to see enough Bruno Fernando. I need to see more of Garuba, the first round picks of 2 years ago, and the first round picks of this last season. And then as it relates to Ty, we said we need a true pass first point guard. That Ty doesn't necessarily, he didn't come into this league or come into college being that guy. He was a multi-skilled guard. But if he knows that his niche with this team and his chance to play, and especially really fit in for the long term with this team, is to run the one, then run the one. Be the point guard that gets the ball and puts the best Green and KPJ in the best positions to do what they do, and you'll find your way onto the floor and play defense. Yeah. And I think he's capable of doing it. He has that skill set.
Even if it's not like the long-term plan, like to me, playing Ty at the point with Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. on the floor at the same time is more of a look to get like more of a look at Kevin Porter Jr. Like I think Ty Washington's fine. I don't think Ty Washington's like the point guard that like leads this team to the playoffs. I believe Scoot Henderson can be that guy. Mm-hmm. I really want to see more of Kevin Porter Jr. off the ball than Ty Washington getting a bunch of run at the point. Now, I do want to see Ty over Knicks at the point, so kind of the balance there. But my idea is more to see Kevin Porter Jr. off the ball than Ty Washington off the floor. Like, that's where I kind of rank it.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think there's certain guys that have to do certain things. As it relates to Josh Christopher, you were a first-round pick. When they said you couldn't shoot the ball, you worked diligently on your shot. The one thing that's always been a knock on you is you're a gunner. You can't stop shooting and be shoot first all the time, no matter if it's point guard or otherwise. You have athleticism. You have the ability to play defense. You have some size. If you can just use the same kind of focus and dedication to doing what it takes to be a point guard in this league, especially as it relates to this team, the same way you did when you developed your shot more and your three-point shot to be an NBA shooter, you could be someone, and you have all the skill set, but how much do you want it? And do you think that's – because, again, the problem is as it relates back to Kenyon Martin Jr. is Kenyon Martin Sr. is his biggest detriment because Kenyon Martin Sr. is dictating what he needs to do and the system he needs to play in and how he needs to be used. Kenyon Martin Jr. is a different player than his dad was, and he is fitting in right now in a system – to where he could have a long-term fit with this team. But if you want to rock the boat, if you want to be the guy that keeps meddling as a dad, whether he fits or not, he's going to be gone because you don't need the distraction. And I think that Josh Christopher, Ty Washington, whoever else you bring in, they have to understand that there's a certain focus and you have to know your role and want to play it. And if you don't, then we'll show you the door and we'll find somebody else because you aren't one of our foundational big pieces. You are a piece and you could be replaced. But if you truly think and want to be here, we'll tell you what you need to do. If you do it, you'll find minutes and you'll find a role on this team. It's that simple.
713-780-3776. You know, one scenario we've not talked about a whole lot with the Houston Texans is we're already looking ahead to the next head coach. And we've also talked about, like, what do we think the percentage chances there are of a new head coach, Lovie Smith returning. What if Lovie Smith is back, though? Like, that's the what if that we haven't spent time discussing. We've discussed the what if Lovie is the Texans move on from Lovie. We've discussed the what if at number one. We've discussed the what if at moving down. We've discussed the what if Nick Caserio is fired. The one what if, and maybe it's because we don't want to talk it into existence, is what if Lovie Smith is back, which I think is a better chance than maybe the overall city thinks it is. Like, I don't think it's, I think it's like 30% chance he's back. I think you're kind of somewhere between 30 to 50. Brendan said a couple of weeks ago he's at 70. I don't know where he's at with that. But what if Lovie Smith is back as the head coach of the Houston Texans? How does that change things for that organization?
So it changed things in a lot of ways for me. And the first way is then you definitely shouldn't draft a quarterback. Because if Lovie Smith is back, he's not the right head coach to get a young franchise quarterback unless, and this is where something else has to change, Pep Hamilton has to change. He has to be out, and you have to find an offensive coordinator that is more modern era capable of calling an offensive game and being successful and getting results. And so, you know, we talked about the fact that you're not going to get an OC that comes here under the stipulation of we don't know how long Lovie's going to be here. If he leaves and you do a good job, you could be in the running and realize other teams are going to make way better offers if you truly are a talented guy. So you're probably not going to get the kind of guy you want anyway. So I would start by saying if Lovie's back, I hope they don't take a franchise quarterback. And if they are going to take a franchise quarterback and Lovie's back, then I hope to God they get a different offensive coordinator.
Yeah, that's kind of where my sense is at, too. Like, I don't think that there's any way Pep Hamilton's back as the OC. Like, if Lovie Smith is back, it's pretty much with an entirely different coaching staff outside of, like, Frank Ross, who's pretty good special teams and probably his son, right? You might even have a different play caller defensively, although the defense has looked a little bit better as of late. But it's kind of a philosophical difference than what Nick Caserio has. There's going to be a new offensive regime with the Texans, whether it's OC or whether it's the head coach. I agree with you with the number one pick. Like, if you make the decision to go on one more year with Lovie Smith, there's no way I'm drafting a quarterback. Look, Bryce Young, Will Levis, we've talked about it a little bit, and I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot over the next 4 months. I believe both of them, and I believe that any rookie quarterback coming into the NFL needs the support system to have success. Look at every single good quarterback right now in the NFL, no matter how they came into the NFL, they all have really good supporting cast around them. It took Jalen Hurts a little while to figure it out. They helped him with A.J. Brown and an offensive coaching staff. It took a little bit for Tua to figure it out, and there's still some figuring out to do, but they brought in a very good offensive mind, and they helped him out with Tyreek Hill. So, like, if you're going to keep Lovie Smith, if that is the what if that we're entertaining, that Lovie Smith is back as the head coach, I think you have to punt on quarterback. I think that you have to, you can't draft a Bryce Young or a Will Levis at number one. You're either trading down, you're taking defense at the top of the draft, but there's no way that you can take a quarterback 1-1 if Lovie Smith is still the head coach.
Yeah, no, look, I think that has to be a reality. That's going to be a harsh reality for the organization and the owner and other people possibly to accept, but that's exactly what it is. And it's a tough scenario because you're dealing with outside variables that normally you don't deal with. Either a head coach is good or he's not. Either he's the right guy for a young quarterback in this and where the franchise is, or he's not. But it's not as simple and cut and dried as football and football only, though the football hasn't been good. But if it was just up to the results that you got on the field this season and what you saw, he'd already be gone. But we know that there are other variables, and we know that the fact that this organization's reputation and what they did in the last 2 years with their hiring and firing of coaches, if they move on, and the fact that they also did it to two minority coaches, is going to be a massive factor for the organization. And how the trickle-down effect then is approached and attacked by the media, the fan base, and otherwise. So it makes it more difficult. And that's the thing. But it has to be a factor that you discuss, because you need to know clearly what management and ownership is thinking, and then you also have to make the right structural decision for the franchise going forward. And that's going to be strictly as it relates to the franchise quarterback. You're not going to get that guy if Lovie's still going to be your head coach, in my opinion, or should you? You should not do it.
All right, Blankers, you got to head out. You got some daddy duty.
I got kid duty.
So you're leaving out a little 15 minutes early or so. Happy holidays to you. Happy
to
holidays
you as well,
to
sir.
Mrs. Blankers and the Blankers children. I'm going to miss you here over the next couple weeks.
Stop can't, it. I'm you won't
serious.
Be here
I will. I will. I know, but I'll still miss you a little bit.
Well, we'll text. We'll all text. I mean, part-time Brendan is going to be living it up in the Midwest. We'll all text
hopefully.
To find out how cold
yeah,
it
hopefully.
Is here
hopefully.
And how cold he is there.
Right,
if he gets there.
Happy holidays to you and yours. Can't wait for the new year when we get the Killer Bees rolling
right.
again. But Brendan and I are going to close it out. Little Mariano Rivera, Trevor Hoffman. The great what if. What if Lovie Smith is back as the head coach of the Houston Texans? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before I get out of here and before we take a break, look, one more final word for Apollo Men's Health. If you guys got New Year's resolutions, if you guys have a need in the new year to start doing things differently, take better care of yourself. Your health is your wealth. Invest in yourself. Start by going to Apollo Men's Health. Go to apollomh.com right now. Find out all the services they offer, because there's going to be a few that could interest you and make a difference as you start getting out of 2022 and into 2023. And from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you need help, they can get you there. If you need answers, they've got them. And they are going to put you on the right program to get you where you need. They can get you more energy on a daily basis, from B12 shots to hormone therapy for both men and for women. If you need to recover quicker, HGH peptide therapy. You want to get on a workout program and chart your results more closely and calculated and see the numbers in front of you so you can process the data. Do body composition analysis every 2 or 3 weeks. Every month or so, and you can find out your body fat's going down, your muscle mass is going up, the numbers are where I need them to go. They'll also do your blood pressure check and all the vital things that you need to know where you are and how you get to where you want to go. I love these people. They've done great things for me. They will do it for you too. You mention my name and you will get a free B12 shot or a free body composition on your first official visit. But regardless of how you do it now, do it for the new year. Go see my friends at Apollo Men's Health.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The great what if. What if Lovie Smith is back as the head coach of the Houston Texans? It's a scenario that we've not talked about. Maybe we don't want to talk it into existence. Where do you stand on that, Brendan? What if Lovie Smith is back for the Houston Texans? How does that change the way that they handle business in the offseason?
Man, what's tough is I'm with you guys on the idea that if Lovie Smith is back, then you don't draft a quarterback. My only problem is if Lovie Smith is back, then in my mind, he needs to be your guy. And like, I think that just falls in line with my idea on rebuilds, right? I think it's insane to go in year three of your GM and still have this thought that he hasn't gotten his head coach yet. Like, how are you supposed to fully evaluate him if he hasn't hired his coach going into year four?
You can't. You can't. I think that's a good way to describe it. Like, maybe if you're Cal, you give it, you put it in the hands of Nick. Like, I mean, it should be in the hands of Nick, quite frankly. But perhaps the way to handle it is Cal goes to Nick Caserio, you know, first day the season's over, which is probably conversations they're having right now, if we're being honest. And you tell Nick Caserio, look, this decision is how we're going to evaluate you. If you keep Lovie, now this is your butt on the line as opposed to me whenever I hired him. If you fire him and go to Ben Johnson, Josh McCown, whatever, that's your butt on the line. I feel like this has to be the season, to your point, where Nick Caserio's hitching his wagon to a head coach, whether it's keeping Lovie, whether it's hiring somebody else, it has to be Nick Caserio making that decision.
Regardless of what they do at quarterback, you're probably going to enter next year in a situation where Caserio is responsible for either drafting, trading for, signing as free agents, or signing extensions, Brandon Cooks, for example.
Yeah.
He's going to be responsible for 70%, maybe more, of the people on the roster. Like, you're going to be in a place where it is, like, Nick Caserio has gone and gotten all the groceries. He has to be in charge of the cook.
The 70%, though, like, you're probably right. Like,
I think the number might be generous,
give or take
to be honest.
Give or take a few, like, it doesn't really matter. But the situation that he entered, though, I think affects the quality of the 70%. Like, he's not he's not shopping at the best grocery stores. He's not shopping at Whole Foods. Like, he's shopping at Aldi. You know what I mean? Like, because of the situation he got put in, that to me goes to the quality. Like, they've had a high turnover, absolutely, but the quality hasn't been as good because, look, he didn't have a first or a second. If you have a first or a second in year one, by default, the quality of the product, the quality of the roster would be a couple, you know, players better than it is now. I mean, you're adding a Stingley, you're adding a Petrie.
The thing is, I feel like we're already giving a little bit of a cushion in the fact that he's allowed to go into year two with a guy that we're not crediting or blaming him for, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's already kind of crazy that we're letting him get into year two with that. It feels like you're making so many excuses if he goes in. Like, there's a built-in excuse if you go into next year with Lovie Smith as a head coach.
See, that's why I didn't like Lovie. That's why I didn't like that hire, because I felt like that hire by default is an excuse.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think we were a little bit more okay with that this year because the expectations, like, I won't even say they were low. They didn't exist. There was no expectations on what the Texans were supposed to do this year.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I think a lot of people thought that there would be more wins or at least more competitive in game.
Well, but
I mean, we heard at the start of the season that some people thought they could get upwards of 7-8 wins.
No, I guess I don't disagree with you, but I think those people probably look at Lovie and have issue with it, right? Like, I think you and Joel and myself as well, I don't even think, like, in reality we spend time criticizing Lovie very much. It's not that we have an issue with what Lovie has done as a head coach. It's that we've never taken him seriously as the guy.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good way to do it, to describe it. Like, we haven't. Like, we've thought that Lovie Smith is the transitional head coach. And that goes back to your point, though. Like, if you give Lovie Smith the second year, it can't be that label. It can't be a transitional head coach. You shouldn't have a transitional head coach going into that third year of the rebuild. 5208, the Bengals got Burrow and Chase. Maybe the Texans should get Johnson and Duggan. Burrow and Chase were a year apart, so it's not a like-to-like comparison. I haven't really even seen Duggan, like, taken seriously as an NFL prospect. Like, it's a little bit of a TCU bias there. I'm rooting for TCU in the college football playoff, but I haven't seen him taken seriously as an NFL quarterback.
We did get a UCLA quarterback-wide receiver combo recently, didn't
we? At least I've seen that guy projected to be drafted. Now, that guy was projected to be drafted, like, in the sixth round, but I've not seen Duggan drafted at all.
The other thing to, if Lovie Smith is back, I also just don't like Lovie Smith, the head coach. Aside from the fact that, like, I do feel I need to pin him to Caserio.
Gary is not going to be very happy with that, Brendan.
No, Gary isn't going to be very happy with me. I mean, like, I think Lovie Smith's a fine head coach. I think you said it earlier. Like, I don't think he's the worst head coach in the league. I don't think Lovie Smith is making you... I don't think he is lifting the level of your roster. Maybe he's keeping you equal. Like, maybe he's not losing you games. I don't think he's winning you games. And he's also a defensive mind, which is fine. There are some really good coaches in the league who are defensive minds. I'd prefer an offensive mind, especially since you're going to have to figure out a quarterback. Because here's the thing, Jeremy. We're saying they got to pin the quarterback or the coach to Caserio if he moves forward with Lovie Smith.
Uh-huh.
How can we say that and also say they can't take a quarterback? Are they just never going to take a quarterback?
It's probably a trio, right? Like, if you are going to make that move, and it is for an offensive guy, and you do take a quarterback at number one, Casario's now hitching his wagon to the trio.
Right.
Casario, the head coach, the quarterback, and Nick Casario's either going to continue on as the Texans' general manager if that trio has success, or he's going to get fired in 3 years if it doesn't. But it's time for those, like, that has to be the defining moment. There's not been defining moments for Caserio. There's not been make or breaks. There's not been you're going to live or you're going to die. This has to be it.
But, Jeremy, if they roll in the next year with Lovie Smith and we're agreeing, that means he's Casario's guy. When do they get a quarterback?
Yeah.
Do you have to go the vet route? Do you have to, like, try and trade for one or see if you can grab one in free agency?
I think, like we've kicked around the idea of Caleb Williams. 8029, should the Texans wait till next year to draft Caleb Williams and hire Lincoln Riley? I love that scenario. That scenario's punting on an entire year, right? So, like, I understand the frustration of that. I understand that Nick Caserio's probably not capable of doing that. Like, it's going to be hard for him to keep a job if, like, he goes to Nick Caserio or he goes to Cal McNair and goes, look, we're going to keep Lovie around for another year. We're going to trade down. We're going to build the supporting cast. And then we're going to do everything we can to get Caleb Williams next year. And then we're going to hire Lincoln Riley. That's not something you can sell as a general manager to an owner.
Can't sell it to me.
I realize that. Like, I understand. I realize that. I can say that, but I can also say of this two-year window, which quarterback do I love the most? It is Caleb Williams, and I'm not going to lie. I'd be very intrigued with Caleb Williams paired with Lincoln Riley. I don't think the Texans are in a position to be able to do that. I don't think Nick Caserio is in a position where he is able to do that and have great job security, right? So, like, I don't think that possibility exists. There has to be a quarterback there. But even if it is, like, kind of in the back of your mind, Caleb Williams, Lincoln Riley's, like, looming, you have to go get your quarterback other than the draft, right? Like, if you're not going to take Levis, you're not going to take Bryce Young at number one, you're not trading down and taking Stroud or taking Richardson, which Richardson I don't think is a starter next year in the NFL anyways. He's a project. You have to go get that guy. You have to go get, like, a Trey Lance. I don't know if he'd be available. A Zach Wilson, like a retread like that. A Jordan Love would be a name, like, if you go the scenario I like. It's not my way that I would do business, but if you're forced to go that way, I think that that those are the type of quarterbacks you have to be looking for.
I was just realizing that it's kind of, you know, it's kind of arguing against yourself to say, like, if Lovie stays around, you can't draft a quarterback, but also if Lovie stays around, he's the guy. Because no matter what, there is a hole at quarterback that you got to figure out. But I still feel both things. I was sorting through my own feelings, I guess.
See, 6927 says everyone was intrigued by Kingsbury and Murray together, and look how that turned out. I don't love that comparison. I understand that Lincoln Riley's a college coach coming to the NFL. Kingsbury was a college coach coming to the NFL. The difference is Kingsbury was fired as a college coach coming to the NFL, where Lincoln Riley has a top five, top 10
program.
Well,
hadn't he just taken a coordinator job in college before that?
Ironically, it was USC. He was going to be Helton's OC at USC, which is kind of the irony of all of this. I want great offensive mind. And if you look at Kingsbury and Murray at Arizona, it hasn't always been bad. Like,
last year they
were 6-0. People were looking at them as like a Super Bowl darling in the NFC.
I think they looked like the best team in the NFC at that point in time.
Like, even Kingsbury and Murray that we're kind of like dogging on at their best look great. And I would put more to blame on Murray, to be honest with you. I think Murray at a lot of times is selfish. I don't think he's a great like decision maker. I don't think he's necessarily like a terrific locker room dude. All of those things. So, like, I don't know if that's the best comparison to look at a Bryce or a Caleb Williams in a Lincoln Riley pairing.
I just don't want to wait, man. You can't burn NFL seasons.
I'm kind of with you. I love Caleb Williams, but I don't think that the Texans are in a position to do that.
I am more open to waiting on quarterback than I am waiting on head coach. It's kind of like a take in itself with like 30 seconds left in the show.
Yeah.
But you're burning NFL seasons if you just keep rolling with transitional coaches for the third straight year.
I'm with you. You got to hire. You got to hit your wagon. You're Nick Caserio. All right, that's going to do it for us. Brendan, safe travels tomorrow. Hopefully you get to where you got to get to the Hive. Happy holidays. We'll talk to you in the new year. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.